This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. We'll take a look at your grain futures from the close of business Wednesday, as there was no trading on Thanksgiving Day yesterday. First off, corn headed into the Turkey Day break lower. Soybean traders took money off the table ahead of Thanksgiving, and wheat posted double-digit losses Wednesday. Corn futures closed the pre-Thanksgiving session with 5.25 to 5.75 cent losses in the front months. Trading will resume this morning at 8:30. Ethanol data for the week of the 20th, last Friday, showed ethanol production at 28,000 barrels a day higher than the previous week, which was 990,000 barrels a day. That's the largest since before COVID. Stocks rose 663,000 barrels to 20.833 million, with the Midwest and Gulf Coast taking up a majority of that buildup. Finished motor gasoline product supply was down 128,000 barrels a day to 8.129 million, the lowest since the week of June 12th. That's down 1.075 million from the week before Thanksgiving last year, as states now are implementing stay-at-home restrictions. U.S. corn export sales for the week of the 19th, last Thursday, are expected to be in a range of 800,000 to 1.4 million metric tons in today's report. Rabobank estimates the 2020-2021 Brazilian corn crop at 107.2 million metric ton versus the current USDA projection of 110 million metric tons. Soybeans settled for 7 to 8.25 cent losses in the front months Wednesday. The 7.25 cent loss was the largest move lower for January futures since October 28th. Soybean meal was down 30 cents a ton, soybean oil 14 cents higher. The weekly export sales report pushed back to today is expected to show 700,000 to 1.4 million metric tons in soybean sales for the week ending last Thursday. Meal bookings are seen at 100,000 to 300,000 metric tons, with bean oil in a range of 12 to 50,000 metric tons. According to customs data out of China, 8.688 million metric tons of soybeans were imported during the month of October. That's up almost 41% from last year. Of that total, 3.4 million were from the United States and 4.23 million from Brazil. And mentioning Brazil, their soybean crop for this year is estimated at 130 million metric tons by Rabobank. That's 3 million metric tons shy of the current USDA numbers. Moving on finally to wheat on Wednesday. They had a nosedive in the winter contracts. Minneapolis down 7 to 9 3/4. Chicago down 24 cents on the day. That's their largest single day drop since August 12, 2019. Kansas City futures down 18. Egypt's Department of Agriculture apparently noticed and issued an import tender for wheat, with results due yesterday, Thursday. South Korean importers purchased 80,000 metric tons, and Taiwan mills purchased 82,220 metric tons of U.S. wheat Wednesday. Friday's delayed export sales report for soybeans, which will not include those sales, is expected to show 200 to 400,000 metric tons of wheat bookings during the week ending last Thursday. That would be an improvement over the last year's marketing year low of 192,389 metric tons. Russia's Department of Agriculture raised their 2020-2021 wheat production estimate by 900,000 metric tons to 85.3 million. They also increased the country's projected export by 1 million to 40.8 million metric tons. So going back over Wednesday's numbers from the Board of Trade Chicago, corn for December was down by 5 3/4 at 420, May corn down 5, 427 and a half, May corn down 5 1/2, 430 1/4. Beans for January down 7 1/4 to 1184. March beans down 7 1/2, 1185 3/4. May corn down 8 at 1184. Chicago wheat for December down 23, 588 1/4. March wheat down 21, 596 1/2 at the Wednesday close. May wheat down 19, 599 3/4 at the Wednesday close. Bean meal for December down $1.40, 396.90 a ton. Jan bean meal down $1, 395.90. Kansas City wheat down 17 1/4, 543 3/4. March wheat in Kansas City down 20 1/4, 550 1/2. Bean oil was the lone bright spot Wednesday. December up 12, 83.18. January up 14, 37.86. Now we'll move on and take you to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield to recap Wednesday's cash grain report.
This is Wednesday's report of grain price insurance prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. The Lincoln grain price were lower on Wednesday afternoon. Technical selling on the Board of Trade today weighed on grain prices. In northern and western Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 5 to 6 cents lower, 392 to 419. Soybean bids are down 7 cents at 1134 to 1172. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 6 cents lower at $4 to 421, while soybean bids are down 7 to 10 cents at 1155 to 1191. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids are 4 to 6 cents lower at 389 to 440. Soybean bids are mostly 4 to 7 cents lower at 1150 to 1203. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 7 cents lower at 1186 to 1199. Basis was steady at 2 over to 15 over the January. High pro soybean meal on a truck base offered at 399.90 to 406.90 a ton, down $1.40 a ton, with basis unchanged at 3 over to 10 over the December. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids were 6 cents lower, 415 to 444, with basis steady at 500 at 24 over the December. Illinois River barge loading elevators quoted their producer corn bids down 5 to 8 cents at 416 to 426, with basis mixed at 400 to 6 over the December. Soybeans ended steady to down 7 cents at 1173 to 1181, with basis unchanged up 7 at 1100 to 3 under the January. East St. Louis barge loading tomato placer producer corn bids down 4 to 6 cents, 446 to 447. These elevators lowered their soybean prices 6 to 11 cents. Quotations at $12 to 1201. Soft wheat closed down 3 cents at 617 to 618. Milo ended the day 6 cents lower at 480 to 502. Contract bids producers for January delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 396 to 430. Soybeans at 1134 to 1173. In the central part of the state, corn for January delivery at 411 to 431, soybeans at 1161 to 1193. In the southern part of the state, corn for January delivery at 413 to 453, soybeans at 1167 to 1211. That concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on now to your latest livestock futures reports from Wednesday off the Board of Trade. Beef cattle were higher ahead of Thanksgiving. Hogs were also higher headed into the Thanksgiving holiday. First off, live cattle futures had gains of 17 to 35 cents in the nearby contracts Wednesday. Feeder cattle futures posted triple-digit gains for the front months, with help coming from losses in the grain complex. Tuesday's feeder cattle index was at 137.30, up 18 cents from the previous day, Monday. Wholesale box beef prices were again higher in the Wednesday afternoon report. Choice up 76 cents, 245.06. Selects up $1.19, 220.90. A few cash trades were reported at $111 earlier on Wednesday, with Northern sales of 174 in the beef. USDA estimated Wednesday's federally inspected cattle slaughter at 118,000 head for the day, down 1,000 head from a week ago and the same day last year. Week-to-date slaughter was at 360,000 head, up 1,000 head from last week. Moving on into your hogs, lean hog futures ended Wednesday with gains of 67 to $1.07 in the nearby contracts. December pork cutouts were $1.07 higher Wednesday. The lean hog index from Monday was down 13 cents, 67.70. The national average base hog price was down 50 cents at 57.39 in the Wednesday afternoon report. National pork carcass cutout values were up 77 cents on Wednesday to 78.35, and the USDA had Wednesday's hog slaughter at 494,000 head for the day. Week to date was 1.462 through Wednesday. That's 24,000 head more than last week, and 26,000 more head than the same week in 2019. So again, going back over your Wednesday livestock futures that were higher across the board. December live cattle up 20 cents, 111.37. February live cattle up 22 cents at the Wednesday close, 114.17. April live cattle up 27 cents at 117.42. Feeder cattle for January up $1.57, 140.17. March feeders up $1.15, 139.27. April feeders up $1.05, 140.40. Finally, your lean hogs on Wednesday were up 87 cents on December, 66.17. February lean hogs up 92, 67.67. April lean hogs up 52 on Wednesday at 70.75. And a reminder for you, the close of trade is early today at Chicago, so your closing market report will be heard at 12:40 right here on WSMI AM and FM. Now we'll move on this Friday morning back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield to recap Wednesday's cash livestock report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Wednesday afternoon livestock report. Started the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations are 200-pound park carcass traded 50 cents lower, in a range of 51 to 58.50 with a weighted average carcass price of 57.39. On the Illinois Direct Sow Port, slaughter sow price were firm with moderate demand for heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded $28 to $34, 4 to 5 weighted $32 to $36, 5 to 6 weighted $35 to $39, and over 600 pounds $39 to $41. On the Illinois direct hog trade, prices of barrels and gilts country buying points were steady with moderate demand for moderate offerings, ranging from $36 to $42. Packer receipts for barrels and gilts a total $24,522. In the direct cattle trade, in the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, choice steers live basis trade at 106 to 111. On address basis at 170 to 177. Choice heifers and live basis trade at 108 to 111 and on address basis at 171 to 177. From the National Daily Pork Plant Port, trading for retail and processing cuts was stash with 397 loads traded. Calculations are 200-pound pork carcass was 78.35, which is 77 cents higher. From the National Box Beef Cutout Port, values for choice select beef carcass are trading higher. Choice carcass 245.06, which is 76 cents higher, while select herders 220.90, which is $1.19 higher. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 118,000, compared to 119,000 last week, 119,000 1 year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated 494,000, compared to 494,000 last week, and 479,000 1 year ago. That includes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show on this Friday morning, brought to you by Pros Drainage, by Taylor Tire and Auto of Litchfield, and by Farm Credit Illinois. Part two of the Morning Ag Show brought to you by the CNB Bank and Trust with 17 locations to serve you, and by Stein Seed. And once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thanks again, Randy. Now here in Ag News for this Friday morning. Congressional Democrats are planning to seek billions in federal broadband spending next year to boost access in rural areas, affordability, and funding for school computers. House Democrats have already passed, as part of a pandemic relief, $4 billion in emergency aid to help financially strapped families stay online, where President Joe Biden has endorsed universal broadband. Data is key to ending the digital divide for students, farmers, doctors, and consumers. Missouri Farm Bureau President Blake Hurst, on behalf of the American Farm Bureau, told ag lawmakers this earlier this year.
Farming has changed. We used to think that we just grew corn and soybeans. Now we generate data, trillions of bits, all containing information that can make us more efficient, economical, and can reduce our environmental impact.
Hurst says while most Americans take broadband for granted, more than a quarter of rural Americans lack access, compared to only about 2% of urban Americans. And then there's the homework gap described by many lawmakers.
It's students and individuals in their homes that just do not have the connectivity, and that's a huge problem.
You know, you have kids doing their homework in parking lots. That's just not right.
I have kids who I represent, families I represent, school teachers I represent, who cannot access internet at home. Teachers who, when school was still in session, were having to drive to parking lots to be able to conduct the school lessons.
President Trump, back in 2018, signed an executive order to speed federal permitting of rural broadband towers, including on federal land. And the House this year included $24 billion in its HEROES Act to improve broadband mapping, and billions more in subsidies for households, students, schools, and libraries. Senate Republicans proposed their own bill instead, and talks on a compromise broke down. While agency spending bills are still in focus as the government funding deadline approaches December 11th. In other news from Washington, outgoing House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson has concerns regarding President-elect Joe Biden's transition as it relates to agriculture. In a letter to the General Services Administration, The Minnesota Democrat says, quote, I write to express my concerns about the impacts to farmers, ranchers, and consumers from the lack of a timely presidential transition process. While the delayed transition is now underway, the impacts of the delay persist. Specific issues mentioned by Peterson include the Department of Agriculture's ongoing work with the meat and poultry plants amid the COVID pandemic, along with the risk of African swine fever entering the United States from China. Other issues include outbreaks of high pathogenic avian influenza across Europe and Asia and a shortage of CO2 production impacting meatpacking plants. Peterson states, quote, dedicated civil service staff in the USDA Office of Homeland Security and throughout the department are monitoring these and other crucial situations, but it will take a high-level leadership and the ability to muster funding to address them. Moving on to the latest Chicago Board of Trade news, back in August, the commodity markets began picking up steam out of their COVID-19 doldrums. While prices have risen steadily since then, many in the market are wondering how long this uptake can and will last. Clayton Pope is the president and owner of Pope Commodities in Champaign. Some in the commodities industry are beginning to wonder if the market may be close to running out of reasons to remain a bull market.
We've thrown an awful lot of bullish factors at this market, no doubt about that. And you do kind of wonder if we could be running out of fuel in the short term. But on the other hand, there's still some very live issues out there that could definitely be providing some more fuel. For one thing, I mean, the bearish sentiment when we started this thing off in August was kind of off the charts in terms of what a dismal outlook could look like. People were talking about a 3.3 billion bushel corn carryover and beans of 500 or 600 million, something like that. And then all of a sudden, things started to turn.
Pope says fund buying is one of the reasons for the upturn since August.
It's been an interesting rally just because the funds came in here with both feet and have just propelled this thing nonstop. And it is very unusual, not unprecedented, but it is pretty extraordinary to see a move be as one-sided as this one has been. And as such, it's really caught a lot of shorts off guard, I think.
Many in the commodity markets believe demand is another factor that helped prices rise from their COVID slump.
Everybody keeps referring to this whole thing as a demand-led market. We've got the first demand-led market in a long time. It's interesting to note, though, that if you look at the carryover and the whole balance sheet for soybeans, since the August supply and demand compared to the November one, really the only significant change in the demand side was exports, which have gone up by 75 million bushels. Now, 75 million bushels is a lot of bushels, but it's not that many. On the other hand, the supply in that same period from August to November, the supply of soybeans has dropped 346 million. Bushels. So the net of those two is about the 420 million bushel drop in the carryover. So it's definitely been a pretty hair-raising drop to see that carryover go from 610 to 190.
He also says calling it a demand-driven market is a misnomer. The thing that's changed the most in the market is supply, not demand. Pope looked at the immediate future of the commodity markets.
Demand obviously is on everybody's mind because China is the unanswerable question for now. We'll just have to wait and see. Certainly the timing of things would suggest that they are on the tail end of their buying program right now. I would think going forward, the biggest question remains supply. And that again looks down to South America, Brazil, Argentina. They've had their problems looking at some planting delays, but let's face it, it's still a little early. Last week, I think two of the main Brazilian consulting firms down there both raised their production estimate for Brazilian soybeans.
Finally, Pope says the impact of South American soybeans on the commodity market is yet to be determined.
The point is that it's not this universal call for some crop disaster in Brazil when an awful lot of the think tanks down there actually think things are looking pretty darn good. So we'll have to see. The devil will be in the details going forward. No question, moisture levels are very dry overall. This is delayed planting for both Brazil and Argentina. But look how many years we've started off dry. I know it's a different type of soil and everything down there. But the real test of this market fundamentally, I think, is quite a bit down the road, a month or two down the road probably.
Again, that was Clayton Pope, the president and owner of Pope Commodities in Champaign. And another news out of Champaign, ag economists at the U of I have been looking through the historical crop insurance data. That data shows that since 1989, farmers in Illinois, and for that matter across the country, overwhelmingly chose to use crop insurance as a risk management tool, according to Illinois Extension ag economist Gary Schnittke.
Crop insurance is extensively used. It's used on over 85% of the acres for corn and soybeans in Illinois. That which is planted is insured. And the single most popular crop insurance product is RP.
RRP stands for Revenue Protection and is just one in a series of federal government-backed crop insurance choices that a farmer can make.
What they like about RRP is probably two things, the guarantee price increase associated with RRP, and they prefer farm-level coverage to any sort of county-level products.
Schnitke also says it'll be interesting to see if farmers choose to include any of the new add-on crop insurance products that are coming out in 2021. And as for the right crop insurance product, he says RP is the right move.
That's a good decision. RP is a very good product. It provides excellent protection, and migrating to that makes perfect sense.
Corn and soybean farmers will make their 2021 growing season crop insurance choices come March. This year, that choice will include the Enhanced Coverage Option, or ECO. It works like SCO, but is not subject to the ARC and PLC decision. And in another study from the U of I, 91% of 1,000 people surveyed across the country say they are still shopping for their groceries in person. Here's some of the other food-related things people have been up to during the pandemic, according to Brianna Ellison from the University of Illinois.
The other thing they did most often was ordering takeout from a restaurant. So we saw 63.5% of people reported ordering takeout from a restaurant in the last 2 weeks. Things that were less common were eating at a restaurant sitting indoors, eating at a restaurant sitting outdoors, and shopping for groceries online. For each of those, about a third of people reported doing them in the last 2 weeks.
And those last 2 weeks were back in September. Interestingly enough, because the survey was nationwide, a higher proportion of people in the Midwest and the South were far more likely to eat indoors at a restaurant, although that number wasn't very big, according to Ellison.
And then when it came to eating at a restaurant and sitting outdoors, we saw the largest share of people in the Northeast region reporting doing this in the past 2 weeks.
Here are the general takeaways that Ellison pulled away from the survey. First, people are generally following public health guidance, sticking to essential activities like grocery shopping, and limiting non-essential things like going out to eat. However, she says Americans are still supporting the industry by ordering takeout, even if it is at a lower frequency than before the COVID-19 pandemic. Moving on to Illinois State Ag News for your Friday. Randy DeSutter, a farmer from Woodhull, has been elected president of the Illinois Corn Growers Association for the upcoming year at their reorganizational meeting, which was held on Tuesday following the organization's annual meeting. DeSutter has served on the ICGA board for 8 years, most recently as the vice president. He will continue his role as the District 3 director for the duration of his term as president, serving members in Henderson, Henry, Knox, Mercer, Rock Island, and Warren County. Joining DeSutter in the leadership roles are Vice President Marty Moore of Jacksonville, Treasurer Sarah Hastings of Sydney, and Secretary Kate Danner of Aledo. The Exports Committee will be led by Chairman Dave Rylander of Victoria and Vice Chairman Matt Rush of Fairfield. Elected to lead the Industrial Committee were Terry Smith of Clayton and Vice Chairman Keith Sanders of Vandalia. Grassroots Committee leadership for the upcoming year are Chairman Bill Lee of Minock and Vice Chairman Garrett Hawkins of Waterloo. Two directors were reelected and will continue in their positions as directors. They're Keith Sanders for District 11 and Garrett Hawkins for District 14. Reelected at-large directors include Kate Danner of Aledo and Dave Rylander of Victoria. Three newly elected directors include Ellen Ron of Mount Carroll, serving corn farmers in District 2, Jason Bunting of Emerson, serving corn farmers in District 5, and Mike Shane of East Peoria, serving corn farmers in District 8. Moving on now to news from the U of I Extension. Andrew Holsinger, horticulture educator serving Christian, Jersey, Macoupin, and Montgomery County, was honored by the U of I Extension for his innovative use of technology to expand programmatic reach. Holsinger received the Excellence in Technology Award in recognition for his video production work, including the addition of closed captioning to video uploads on the Horticulture YouTube channel. He has been instrumental in introducing various technology platforms to the horticulture team during the transition to remote work. Holsinger provides horticulture education for gardeners of all ages and skill levels. He offers expertise in pruning techniques, plant identification, fruit trees, and using technology methods for teaching. Additionally, he is responsible for offering leadership to the training and educational needs of the Master Gardener program in the four-county area. Also in news from the U of I Extension, District 18, Ashley Bell, the environmental and energy stewardship educator that serves Christian, Jersey, Macoupin, and Montgomery County, was recognized for her dedicated and impactful work with the Extension. Bell received the Excellence in Program Evaluation Award from the U of I Extension. That award recognizes overall excellence in ensuring evaluation of Extension programs to primarily determine the impact of the program on participants, as well as determining program improvement. Continuous evaluation of her programs has allowed Bell to develop and deliver high-impact educational programming to accommodate diverse audiences. By tailoring programming needs to local communities, her programs have experienced continual growth over the last 3 years. Bell's program evaluations reveal that through positive changes in the knowledge and behavior of participants, long-term measurable outcomes are being recognized. Bell's current Extension role focuses on the environmental energy stewardship. She has been extremely successful in demonstrating the value of her programs to stakeholders in the area. Her partnership with the CEFS Economic Opportunity Corporation, which works to increase energy efficiency engagement in underserved communities, was recognized as an Ameren Illinois Energy Innovator Award. Ashley works out of the Christian County Extension Office in Taylorville. And now moving on to the latest news from the IDNR, Illinois hunters took home more than 47,000 deer during the first weekend of firearm deer season. After a weekend of pretty nice weather, State Department of Natural Resources spokesperson Rachel Torbert says hunters harvested a preliminary total of 47,147 deer.
Now that's compared with 50,173 from last year. So we're a little lower, but when you look at any number of factors, including weather, the number of crops in the ground, things like that, we're still looking good. And of course, we'll see what the second firearm season brings.
That season runs from December 3rd through the 6th, and there are other deer hunting opportunities in Illinois as well. The archery deer season lasts until January 17th, and muzzleloader-only hunting season will be held December 11th, 12th, and 13th. Illinois counties with the largest harvest over the last weekend included Randolph, Jackson, Fulton, Jefferson, and Hancock County. And that'll conclude Ag News here on a Friday morning, but remember you can always send us your Ag News at WSMI at WSMIRadio.com. Also, check out our Facebook page, WSMI Agriculture. So again, for this Friday morning, November 27th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.